Yeah, it's morning time. Hey, I'm Joe. That's Abe. We got a guest. We got Will Siemens with us today.
We do.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about a bunch of stuff. But I first have to tell people that it's a KBOO moment. We just played a while ago's calendar.
Yeah.
But the part about the pledge drive was still true.
That's true.
But the other stuff might not have been.
So that was an old calendar.
It was an old
calendar.
You're saying
it's not then, it's actually now.
Yes. All this right. is now, that was then.
Okay.
All right, so nobody should panic about any of that. And my goodness, we got so much to talk about today. I want to before we turn our attention to the rally in March, yay! I want to talk a little bit about the chilling effect of the of the war on terror at home. But you had a bunch of stuff you wanted to do.
Yeah, I did a little digging on that Ports deal.
The
Ports deal went belly up.
Oh, you know, that's just a bunch of racist crap.
Yeah, it was a bunch of racist crap, unfortunately, and that's going to leave that's going to have some lingering negative effects, which is too bad because this deal was completely assailable on grounds that had nothing to do with xenophobia and racism.
Really?
Yeah. Well, as it turns out, there's some high-level ties between Dubai Ports World, the government of the United Arab Emirates, and members of the Bush administration.
No.
It involved lots and lots of money.
Money.
Yeah. Specifically, Secretary of the Treasury John Snow, before he became Treasury Secretary, was chief executive of an outfit called the CSX Corporation.
Oh, CSX. They did like railroad.
Yeah. Specifically, a lot of rail interests in and around port terminals.
Right.
Now, shortly before he left CSX to join Bush's cabinet, CSX was bought by, guess who? Dubai Ports World.
Wait, let me get this straight. The whole East Coast commercial rail network is owned by Dubai Ports?
No, not all of them. Just the part owned by CSX.
But CSX is huge, man.
Right, but these are where rail lines intersect with port terminals.
Ah, gotcha.
Where stuff's taken off ships and put onto trains.
I gotcha.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
Containers.
Right. So when he left CSX, Snow received a $33 million buyout.
Uh-huh.
And another lump sum payment of $8 million.
Just a common guy.
Just a common guy, exactly. And shortly after he left, as I mentioned, CSX sold its port operations to Dubai Ports International. There was only one hitch to this deal.
Uh-huh.
And that is it was subject to review and approval by something called the Committee on Foreign Investment. And who happened to chair that committee? The newly minted Treasury Secretary John Snow.
Wait a minute. He checks out his own deal?
Right. Exactly. So he just received $40 million from this company that was just sold to a state-owned corporation from the United Arab Emirates.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, he's in a position to authorize that deal.
Uh-huh.
And he does so. So this didn't have, there's no quid pro quo regarding this most recently proposed sale, the one that just went belly up.
Uh-huh.
But the fact that he didn't recuse himself from this suggests that perhaps he's a little more interested in the deal than he ought to be.
Well, does he have stock options in this thing?
No, he doesn't. As I said, there's no direct quid pro quo.
Ah.
But he's already received $40 million indirectly from these guys. And perhaps they're saying, scratch our backs, Secretary Snow. I don't know.
That's very politely put, I might
say. Yeah, that's very politely put.
These guys are so corrupt. This is the most corrupt administration ever.
The other connection.
Yes.
Relates to something that we've talked about on the show, an outfit called the Carlyle Group.
Ah.
Which is probably at the vanguard of this newly emerging transnational executive ruling class that we've also discussed on this show many times.
Yes.
Bush's daddy, among other very, very powerful people, have seats on the Carlyle board. Former British Prime Minister John Major, former Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger, another former Defense Secretary Frank Carlucci.
Mm-hmm.
All have seats on the Carlyle boards or Carlyle Group's board. And in all likelihood, seats are going to be offered to this President Bush when he's out of office, and also probably to Prime Minister Blair when he's out of office. So what's the connection here? Carlyle's acquisition fund was recently boosted by an infusion of about $100 million from the Dubai Investment Corp., the personal investing arm of the royal family of the United Arab Emirates, or one of the Emirates in the United Arab Emirates.
I'm speechless.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a tangled web here. So it becomes a little easier in this context to understand why all these members of the administration were bending over backwards to make sure that these port facilities were sold to a company controlled by the royal family in Dubai.
I don't know about backward. just, I'd say bending
over. Bending over, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So to have this dismissed on the grounds of, on racist and xenophobic grounds the way it was a huge mistake. If for a whole bunch of reasons, not the least of which is, as the London Independent reported yesterday, a number of governments in the area are now considering changing their oil reserves from dollars to euros as a result. The negative ripples of this are traversing the region now.
Well, you know, it's interesting you should mention the dollars to euros thing, because one of the things that's happening in response to the U.S. pressure on Iran is that Iran is going to put its, it's going to apparently put its oil on, onto a market based in euros rather than dollars.
Yeah, and there was a fear that Saddam Hussein was going to do the same thing.
Yeah, and that led us, is one of the reasons why we went to war with Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume we're going to bomb Iran.
Yeah, that's, that might be a fair assumption. The Carlyle Group's its major holdings are defense-related. So this is a transnational executive elite that is benefiting directly from the foreign policy of the United States as it relates to subjugating other countries.
War.
Yes.
Yes. A couple other things. I'm speechless with with wonder at your research.
Well, thank you.
That was a good job, man.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, okay.
It's that internet thing, man. It's easy.
Hey, internet. There's a play based on the life and writings of Rachel Corrie. Now, people may not remember Rachel Corrie. She was the young American woman who was with Palestinians when she was bulldozed in the Gaza, you know. They buried her in sand and dirt, and she was kind of like a martyr. And, you know, she was a pacifist. Mm-hmm. She was there to protest the ill treatment of Palestinians as she saw it. Interestingly enough, the London theater people decided to make a play. A Guardian editor decided to make a play out of her letters and to kind of have a staged play readings of her letters. And she comes across in the work as both naive and idealistic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of poignant. Here's, I think, a 22-year-old young woman cut off at that age by a bulldozer manufactured in the U.S. I like that. And the play was a very big success in London. It's moved from the kind of the equivalent of off-Broadway to the West End, which is like Broadway in London. Well, it was going to be done in America. It was going to be done at the New York Theater Workshop, which is the outfit, same outfit that did Rent.
Pretty prestigious outfit.
Yeah, fairly prestigious. But they vetted the play with unspecified leaders of the Zionist community.
Hmm.
And now they're not going to do the play. They put it off indefinitely. It's not that they're not going to do it. They just put it off indefinitely because Hamas won the election in Palestine and because Sharon died. So that was their reasons. They're going to put this thing off. Well, a lot of people in the world got very upset at this. And one response has been all over the United States to stage readings of the Rachel, of the My Name is Rachel production. And there's going to be one in Portland, Oregon.
All right.
Yeah, actually this Thursday, March
16th. We ain't afraid of no Zionist community.
Well, I am. Thursday, March 16th at 7 o'clock at the St. Francis Catholic Church at 330 Southeast 11th, there's going to be a staged reading of the play. Now, I have not read the play. So any accusation that it might be anti-Zionist or anti-Semitic or whatever, I can't respond to. Okay? But I do know that this is prior censorship. And to that, I can respond. I don't like it.
No, me neither.
So that there's that. You should go to that. So again, it's My Name is Rachel, this Thursday at 7 o'clock at St. Francis Catholic Church, 330 Southeast 11th. That's a worthwhile event, I think. And I think it's a fairly important opportunity. And I got this other thing. Things are just piling up on me. I can't. There's so much bad stuff. This is great, though. This is. Get ready for this. Remember that Portland, Oregon, was very criticized when it refused to be involved with the anti-terrorism task force.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what happened in an area that was involved: Los Angeles County. Pomona, a very elite college, a professor of Latin American history, said Friday he was questioned about his Venezuela connections by two Los Angeles County sheriff's deputies working for a federal task force and called the quizzing an intrusion into his academic freedom. The college president weighed in, saying that he feared the chilling effect such visits could have on academia. Professor Miguel Tinker Salas said the deputies entered his office without an appointment, during hours normally set aside for student conferences. The deputies were there about 25 minutes, asked him about the Venezuelan community and his relationship with it. They also told him he was not the subject of investigation. They cast the Venezuelan community itself as a threat. Sheriff Lee Baca said Friday that his deputies were doing nothing more than gathering information on the political situation in Venezuela for the Federal Anti-Terrorism Task Force, coordinated by the FBI. But he said he would discourage workplace interviews in the future. They also started questioning students waiting to get in to see the professor.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
They might have Venezuelan connections, too. What is a Venezuelan connection?
Oil. Oil would be a Venezuelan connection. Citgo Gas, I believe, is a Venezuelan company.
So you fill up your Honda at a Citgo station and you've got a Venezuelan connection.
Absolutely. And it's different. You know, look, this is one of many, I'm sure we're going to see lots more of them, smoking guns about this anti-terrorism task force nonsense. It's just another example of the kind of activity the FBI used to do to try to suppress the left in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and now.
So they never really stopped.
Now their focus is, of course, on the so-called terrorist threat. And the terrorist threat consists of Latin American countries that won't play ball with the United States, apparently. I mean, you know, all these countries, Bolivia, what's wrong with Bolivia? Chile, I just saw the president of Chile making her inaugural speech yesterday on C-SPAN. She didn't kowtow to the United States at all. Out with her.
Good.
You know, Brazil. Out with them. Venezuela, out. Out, damn spots. You know, so I think that this is just a sign of things to come. But I did want to say one thing. Even now, as the Bush administration looks more and more rinky-dink and funky and nasty and fascistic, and people are catching on, even Republicans, and the Democrats may get courage, though I doubt it, to oppose these people. Even as all this is happening, and even as it's possible that the Bush administration may collapse of its own ineptitude, that's different than its collapse because it's fascistic, by the way. Even as that's the case, it's going to take 50, 60 years to right the wrongs that these guys have done because they're giving away the store. They're giving away the store. I just looked at this stuff. Gail Norton and company, you know, these are the amazing people. Gail Norton is, you know, resigning as the secretary of the interior. She opened the national parks to snowmobiles. She pushed for greater energy development on public lands. She wants to give away public lands. She's made a mess of the environment. And her people, all of them, are people like deputy secretary, P. Lynn Scarlett, former CEO of Reason Foundation, funded by timber, petroleum, and chemical interests, compares environmentalism to Marxism.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Kit Kimball, Director of Intergovernmental and External Affairs, former Director of the Business of the Western Regional Council of the Business Voice of the West. Thomas Weimer, Assistant Secretary for Policy, Management, and Budget, spent the last 5 years in Norton's Interior Department. In his own words, it shares the Secretary's vision and management skill. Johnny Burton, Acting Assistant Secretary, Land and Minerals Management, broad experience in the oil and gas industry. Vice President of an oil and gas exploration company. Mark Limbaugh, no relation to Rush, served as president of the Family Farm Alliance, an organization that lobbies for less federal intrusion in water issues. Kathleen Clark, Director of Bureau of Land Management. That's the BLM to you folks. A favorite of mining companies during her tenure as director of the Utah Department of Natural Resources. These are the people who are actually stealing the land of America, all the public lands, and giving it to private oil and gas and other energy interests. Crooks. Crooks.
And they're running the show, huh?
Running the Department of Interior. So Gail Norton and her cronies in charge of the giveaway of the land. So, I mean, how are you going to undo that?
Oh, man, you've seen one redwood, you've seen them all.
Absolutely. All right. I'm done with my rant on the subject of Gail Norton for the day. Although it's really bad. It's really bad. So we actually have a guest with us today. Do we not?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. So we have Will Simon. Seaman, like the ocean.
Like the ocean.
Like the ocean. So what is it that brings you to our humble alls?
Joe, you invited me.
Oh, right. Oh, it's because on March 19th, which is this Sunday at 1:30, a major event is going to take place.
The next big
historic
peace march.
Marking the third anniversary of the war.
That's right, the third anniversary of this catastrophe, this crime in Iraq, which has led to the death of over 2,300 soldiers, U.S. soldiers, countless thousands injured. And this is the next opportunity for folks in Portland, and in fact, the entire Pacific Northwest. We invite folks from all over this region to join us on Sunday at 1:30 at Waterfront Park. This is the next big opportunity to be a really physical manifestation of opposition to the policies that Joe just outlined so eloquently there.
Well, I don't know about eloquence. Loud, anyway.
Yes, loud. I should have said loudly. So loudly.
Loudly denouncing the government in all its form. Well, but, okay, look, rally and march, I got to tell you. I mean, I've been rallying and marching since I was a little kid. I went in 1946. I marched in a march against doing away with price regulation. Price is high, don't buy. I remember that. I mean, I've been doing this stuff a long time, man. Are we going to have a huge crowd?
Well, that's entirely up to the listeners today. How many people are you going to call to tell about this event? We're certainly not getting the cooperation of the commercial media in terms of informing folks of this opportunity.
No.
Now and again, there'll be a little news item, but of course we have to rely on community radio like KABU to get the word out, and of course the volunteers of the over 140 local organizations, including some very, very impressive organizations.
Who's going to be there?
Everybody who's anybody here in the Portland region is going to be there. But, for example, the International Longshore and Warehouse Union local.
The ILWU?
That's right. And these are just a couple of the recent folks who've signed on. Tikkun Olam, the social action group of the Congregation Pnei Or here in town.
Uh-huh.
A really important local Jewish organization that is taking such a principled stand on conflict, such as the conflict in Israel and Palestine, not just the Iraq War. Amnesty International has signed on as an important endorser for this event. But most important, not just the organizations, but the members of those organizations and the outreach they represent in the community to call people to come out this Sunday. Now, I agree with you, Joe. Look, I've been marching for many years as well. Some of those marches, you came away with the feeling that, you know, I've just made a pretty significant contribution by being here. Whether it's marching with workers who are on strike, carpenters protesting the use of non-union labor on local contracts, where you really feel you were standing with a local struggle for justice and fairness for working people in this community, where you really felt like that was a pretty substantial contribution. And then there have been other marches where it's been a handful, half a dozen people holding signs. But in this case, I think we have to look at the broad range of reasons for marching. You know, for example, one thing that I frequently hear from my coworkers and folks that I work with in the community is, well, look, the Bush administration isn't listening. Well, of course, we're not simply trying to send a message to the Bush administration. We're also trying to embolden those folks you were talking about earlier, the folks in the Democratic Party who could be mounting a much stronger opposition to this war.
How can you say mount a stronger? They have yet to mount anything.
There are some voices. There are some voices in Congress.
That's true.
They've taken steps. I think it's, for example, our local here from Oregon, Earl Blumenauer, is working on legislation.
DeFazio's good, too.
And DeFazio as well. We, of course, need to press them more, and we, of course, need to move people like Ron Wyden to take a strong stand against this war. Now, so it's not simply directed at the Bush administration. It's also directed at providing some genuine, sustained incentive for people like Wyden and Blumenauer and Wu and Hooley to move from a kind of a passive opposition to this war to a sustained active opposition, to create legislative alternatives that can be supported in Congress, demanding that bring the troops home now. It's not just that, though. That's not those sort of reasons aren't they don't exhaust the motivations we should feel for being out there. And one of them that I think is very important, that I think KABU is such an important part of, is creating a community that can begin to hold these elected officials responsible and accountable. It's one thing to elect someone that we consider a progressive representative to Congress. It's another thing to be able to sustain the accountability for what that person does when they're in office. And this is, for me at least, this is a large part of what coming together to both organize and then to be present at these kinds of rallies.
Well, I think people who may feel that the Bush administration isn't listening, they might be correct in that regard, but tens of thousands of people get together here in Portland, and the same thing happens in cities around the country. The Bush administration is going to notice. There's no way news like that doesn't filter back. So whether or not they listen to what we're saying, that may or may not be so, but they are certainly going to notice. And really the only thing that governments, I think, truly fear is people in the streets by the thousands. So that's what we need to see. It's a Sunday afternoon, there's no football on. There's no excuse.
It might be a little wet, but we don't know.
This is Oregon. We can deal with the
wet. Yeah, this is Oregon.
Come on, we're Oregonians, right? We don't even use umbrellas. No, I'm going to be there, and I'm going to call the people I know, tell them to come out. I think people should do that. I think people should actively participate to try to make this a large event. Now, how the media carries it, what are you going to do? You can't control their trip. But you can certainly have them be aware that this is real and this is a growing force. And I want to tell a story, if I may. Back in 63 or 4, that long ago, and I am that old. Back then, I was privileged to be part of a very small group of individuals who organized what in Portland, at least, and possibly nationally, was one of the first, certainly one of the first, maybe the first, anti-Vietnam War protests. I had seen pictures in Life magazine, of all things, of American advisors standing around directing the waterboarding. In those days, they just held the head underwater, of Viet Cong, presumably, prisoners, by South Vietnamese American agents, in essence. And I was horrified. And I made a big, 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 huge, huge sign that took two poles to hold it, which showed the Life magazine pictures. And we went down to the Army Recruiting Center, actually the Induction Center. In those days, we had a draft. And we marched around, and I remember the police agent in charge of overseeing left-wing stuff at that point, a guy named Charlie Trumbull, he said the sign was too large. He actually made us take it down. I should have got arrested, I know, but I was kind of cowardly. But he made us actually take this thing. I had barbed wire on the top.
It was too large.
Too large. Now, the thing is that there were maybe, between 5 and 20 of us. I don't remember the number. It's very small. And, cars would drive by and they'd pelt us with stuff, The fact of the matter is that that was the opening salvo in a struggle at home that made the immoral war in Vietnam less tenable to the American people. Now, I don't want to suggest that we somehow ended the Vietnam War. I believe the Vietnamese people ended the Vietnam War themselves. But I also believe that that movement, which grew to be a mass movement across America, and opinions were changed by 1968, absolutely. And by the way, even today, in the war in Iraq, the majority of the American people are already saying this is a bad idea. They already know they've been lied to. Lyndon Johnson lied about the Tonkin incident initiating the Vietnam War. But his lie was not as gross, as egregious, as absurd, as awful as the lies of this administration. But I believe that those little acts that we started then grew and grew and grew. Those seeds that we planted eventually produced a huge anti-war movement. And I believe that that's what's going to happen. That's what is happening, in fact, today in America. And I want to point out something else. The media and so-called experts keep saying, well, where's the protest movement? Hell, the protest movement exists in every city in the United States. It is huge. It is both silent and not silent. And it is being systematically dissed and ignored by the media.
Well, not only does it exist in every city here, but around the world. You remember 3 years ago on the eve of the war, there were tens of thousands of people here in Portland. from Georgia? The civil rights
John
activist.
John Lewis.
John Lewis. Yes.
Yeah.
And on that very same day around the world, people protested. There were a million people in London. It was the largest single day of protest in human history.
That's true.
So for somebody to ask, where is the protest movement? Obviously, you know, they're not seeing it because it's not on their television sets. It's not in their newspapers.
Well, and of course, the media is more and more centralized and more interested in trivia and, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, that whole phenomenon in the local media. But the fact of the matter is that this is a ground-based movement. It's going to depend on grassroots sentiment. It's going to depend on neighbor-to-neighbor conversation. It's going to have to take place in the churches, in the synagogues, in the temples. It's going to have to take place in the taverns and on the sports fields. It's going to have to take place, in other words, to a large extent, without benefit of the major media sources. Fortunately, we have blogs. Fortunately, we have the internet. Fortunately, all over the world, we also have reality. And in terms of the reality of the situation, not only is this war immoral and a lie and so on, but it ain't working.
Yeah, I think one thing that comes to mind when we think about how the peace movement, how the opposition to this war is covered in the commercial media, or as you say, not covered, is that that highlights the fact that we are very rarely in a position to judge how effective any particular action is, whether it's organizing a meeting in a church basement or putting together a large-scale rally and peace march. We often will never find out the effectiveness, the contribution that has made to building for social change in our country. Every now and again, we get a glimpse, however. It was years later that through the release of documents from the Nixon administration, we find that, in fact, the Nixon administration was paying attention to what was happening in the streets around the country. We find, for example, that the Pentagon was concerned about having too many troops in Vietnam because they were concerned they wouldn't have enough to deal with the civil unrest at home. But these tiny glimpses into the workings of these administrations rarely are available to us. We don't know where the tipping point will be, either in terms of when a peace movement is going to take off in a dramatic fashion, something beyond the sort of latent opposition that we know is there, manifesting itself as a genuine social movement. We don't know when that's going to take place in this country. But I can tell you from my experience working on an issue that I think many cable listeners remember, and that was the occupation of East Timor, which was eventually liberated from that occupation in 1999. Working through the 90s, there were plenty of times, I should say the majority of time that I spent working on that issue, there was no sign that there was going to be any significant change. It was a kind of faith in what was right. I'm doing this because I know this is the right thing to do on the basis of principle, not on the basis of expediency. And I think we have to have, as Gramsci said, this optimism of the spirit, mm-hmm. and yes, perhaps a little pessimism of the will, not this will here, but pessimism of the intellect and optimism of the will.
Yes, I was going to say
that those sorts of things happen, Joe. You know what? When you're on
Gramsci,
radio,
Gramsci. I mean, come on.
So we need to always keep that in mind, that assessing the effectiveness of our work is a difficult task, but understanding what the right thing to do is not so difficult today.
Well, and I think that's really important. I think that two things you said really grab me. First of all, we never know what the tipping point is. We will never know until history looks back, and even then, not be clear, about what it was that became the most significant things that made this event untenable, this horrible war untenable. And right now, the United States has never, it doesn't matter if you're left or right, doesn't matter what your politics are, the fact of the matter is the United States is in deep doo-doo. It's stumbled into something far worse than Vietnam, and it has made a mess of it. It has waged this is the amazing thing about this administration. Not only do they have bad policies, not only are they fascists, but they're incompetent bad policy fascists. And their whole policy in Vietnam, that's funny, their whole policy in Iraq is absurdly badly managed. And it's too late to fix that, for sure. And make it affordable. They just can't do anything. And now they're contemplating, and I believe this is imminent, the bombing of Iran. Because they don't know how, they're intellectually incapable of understanding the stupidity of their activities. And they're so enthralled with their own fascist images. And I think that this is really important. And then there's this other question, which is kind of the existential one. If you do nothing, if you give way to despair, which is a Catholic sin, if you give way to despair, if you allow yourself to be immobilized by the horror of it all, are you not a participant in that horror?
Dr. King said you are.
Well, yeah.
They say justice happens when people of conscience do nothing, something like that.
Something like that.
And go ahead.
I just think it's so important to get as many people out as possible. And I don't, look, it's not crucial. Doesn't matter if they were 20 people or 20,000 people. The long-term effect of people being in the street is what matters. And I believe this should be a big demo, on the other hand, because unfortunately it takes big demos to get the attention of the stupid people on the local radio and television stations. And I do mean stupid. Have you looked at the local news lately? Woo, it's dumb. Those people are dumb, man. They are stupid people. What is the problem there? Oh, I'm digressing. Sorry. I got to remind people this is KBOO, 90.7 on the FM dial. This is talk radio after all. Even though we're talking, we'd like to hear from you out there. 231-8187.
Our guest is Will Seaman, Commie Pinko, and Rabble Rouser.
He's talking about
the upcoming rally, I don't want to say in celebration, to mark the third anniversary of the war in Iraq.
Rally in March to end the war, to begin the peace.
Perhaps
March 19th.
To celebrate the spirit of renewal and change here. That's such.
Yeah. Sunday at 1:30. Okay. Right. All right. For those of us who aren't really speech listeners, I mean, when does the actual march start?
Well, the actual march starts at...
This is a secret now.
Actually, it's not so much of a secret. We're pretty open.
The actual march.
2:30 p.m. is the scheduled time for the march to begin.
Okay. And I'm going with the black block. I just want everyone to know. As you can see, I'm dressed in my black block suit.
Well, you're welcome, Joe, however you're dressed. in spite of those dismissive remarks about the speakers, I really do think it's important to point out we've got some outstanding people who are going to be addressing the crowd, energizing the crowd. I mean, our keynote speaker is Ramon Ramirez, who's the president of the Regional Farm Workers Union, PICUM.
Oh, actually, and a great person.
He is, first of all, doing such important work in our community in terms of resisting this most recent campaign of attacks against the immigrant communities here in the United States.
Yeah, the Saxon guy, this opportunistic Republican guy.
Just astonishing what we're seeing. Yeah. As things are going to hell in a handbasket in terms of the economy, in terms of foreign policy, what do you expect to happen from the administration, from the people in power? Of course, they're going to start scapegoating. They're going to go after the immigrants. It's the time-honored tradition of great governments that are under siege. And Ramon Ramirez is at the forefront of the struggle to oppose those attacks. Then we've got representatives from Military Families Speak Out and veterans organizations. Reverend Leroy Haynes is going to be there, an outstanding local speaker.
The Albina Ministerial Alliance.
And just an incredible background in the civil rights struggle, working with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and with SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. These are historic figures. They're from our local community, and they're going to be leading the address there at the rally on Sunday at 1:30 at Waterfront Park. We also have this speaker who has just started a tour of Iraqi women who are touring the country, talking about the situation in their country. Her name is Iman Kamas, and she's an Iraqi journalist. She is also going to be addressing the crowd. So, I mean, even if you didn't march, if you came out to Waterfront Park and just listened, you would have you'd be having a feast in terms of introduction to local political leaders.
Okay, I want to emphasize this. This starts at Waterfront Park. It doesn't start at Pioneer Place.
That's right. Not at Pioneer Place or Pioneer Courthouse Square. It's at Waterfront Park by the Morrison Bridge. Once you get close to the Morrison Bridge, you won't miss it. We're going to have some pretty good crowds.
This is March 19th. It's Sunday. Starts at 1:30. March starts at 2:30. Rally in March to end the war and begin the peace. And, of course, with me here is Abe Proctor, Will Seaman, our guest, KBOO 90.7 FM, 231-8187, the number. Let's talk to some of our callers. Who we got?
James, good morning.
James!
Good morning.
Good morning, James. We hardly ever hear from you.
being that this is a war against anti-Semitic fascists, doesn't that make you Nazi fascist?
I'm sorry, you want to take that back to the beginning and say it again?
Being that this is a war against anti-Semitic fascism, doesn't that make you a Nazi fascist?
Well, first of all, I don't see where anti-Semitism plays much of a role in my analysis of what's going on. Anti-Semitism would be a kind of an irrational and vicious hatred of people whose religious faith or ethnic origin would be Jewish. What's that got to do with this thing? I'm not following you.
That's the bottom line, what this conflict is all about.
No.
But the war in Iraq has nothing to do with the people who attacked us on September the 11th, James. You know that, don't you?
Yes, it does. The state of Israel is the main reason why they hate us.
Yes, well, what did Iraq have to do with the September 11th attacks, James? I'm listening. I'll tell you the answer, James. Nothing! Had nothing to do with the September 11th attacks. So your equation doesn't hold up.
Well, wait, James is breaking up. James, are you breaking up from emotion, or is that your equipment?
No, Iraq does have something to do with terror. Iraq was sponsoring terror Hamas against Israel, and it is a war on terror. There is the link to September 11th, but I believe they could have had a hand in it.
Well, they could have. I could have. You know, the Martians could have, man. What are you saying? There's no evidence to support that whatsoever.
The Saudis could have.
The Saudis might
have.
They're more
likely.
They're more
in Saudi Arabia, do we?
How come you're not picking on the Saudis, huh?
James,
in all fairness to you, your equipment is bad, so we're going to let you go. Get on a landline, and we can discuss this again if you want.
You know, I think, though, that James brings up a point that is worth thinking about a little while. If you look at the public opinion polls in this country, you'll find that at least leading up to the Iraq War, there was a significant part of this country that thought there was a link between Iraq and the 9/11 attacks.
You're absolutely right.
And that was not an accident. That was a result of a sustained propaganda campaign. And it reflects the correct perception on the part of the Bush administration that they could not sell this war to the American people without exploiting in such a cynical fashion that horrible attack on September 11th.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. September 11th was the trigger event that has allowed them to go forward with pretty much everything that they've ever wanted to do since the New Deal came along.
Pretty much, yeah. And I think that that was it's an opportunity that fuels so much paranoia in so many ways at so many levels, that some people can't accept the fact that these guys flew these planes into these buildings and knocked them down. There's this whole other thing going on with, it must have been explosions in the building, all that other irrational stuff that's layered on top of all this. In other words, it's hard for people to accept the fact, and I think this is actually racist, that these guys could put together this attack and be so effective. And, of course, I want to point out something else. You know, nobody understood, including the attackers, that the buildings would fall down. How could they know how badly built the buildings were?
Callers, this is not an invitation to call out.
No, I'm sorry I brought it up. I don't want to hear about conspiracies. It's my fault. I'm so sorry. Smack me
out.
A bunch.
All right,
no more. That.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Yeah, sorry.
231-8187 is the number to call. Chuck, you're up next. Good morning.
Joe, you haven't read Frank Ray Griffin's book, have you?
No.
The new Pearl Harbor.
Well, I
did not call in to discuss this, Joe, but you...
I raised
you poked the fire, man. You gotta get a little more responsible and broaden your knowledge of the events.
Wait a minute. I want to stop you right here. I want to just go right back to the title of that book, because I actually have the book.
Well, read it. Did you cut me off?
No,
man.
Still there.
Don't be paranoid.
Here's my point. Okay. The peace movement is an abstraction, and it's a good one. I support it.
It's not an abstraction when people are marching in the streets. Those are real people. I don't feel like an abstraction when I'm out there in the streets.
I'm just wondering about, and that's what I struggle with, and I also struggle with Joe's, the existential despair. I mean, I'm, I feel a little bit at this point in my life on the fringes and the margins and so on. But my question is, what motivates me, and one of the things that I notice that motivates me is a little bit more of the instead of the dream of the good possibility is the desire for revenge and vengeance and to avenge the, you know, the good guys. And what, where does the role, the call for impeaching the criminal, in office and his, come into the peace movement? And is there a call for impeachment? And is that an element in this? Is there room for that? And so on. So I'm, you know, do you catch my drift?
No, I think that's an important point. In fact, I actually believe that this guy is not only should be impeached, but he's certainly impeachable. He's committed high crimes and misdemeanors against the people of the United States. He's dissed the Congress. He's destroyed the economy. He's wiped out the credibility of the nation. He is the most damaging president I think we've ever had.
Well, then that's kind of the question here is, you know, can a peace movement kind of gain any leverage out of a negative call? Which is, you know, I mean, this is, and this, I'm, you know, I'm interested in Lakoff, if they get, you know, this whole rhetorical devices and what's going to win over the mind and heart of the American people, you know, and so that's kind of, you know, can you gain mileage with the negative call for this impeachment, which I think is critical, and it raises some of the, some very interesting questions in the electoral arena coming up. Around the Democrats and the Republicans. And here's the other question for me is, even if Democrats take the House of Representatives, because Americans are, the Republicans lose their, some of their support, would the Democrats necessarily, you know, bring impeachment charges? And that's kind of the question for me. And I'm just going to, do you catch my, my concern?
No, I think your concern is very valid.
Okay, I'm going to hang up and keep listening. And that's, I'd be interested in Will's remarks about, you know.
Sure.
I think this is, this is an outstanding question. I'd like to bring listeners' attention to the fact that the Center for Constitutional Rights, which has been at the, I mean, they have been the champion in terms of challenging the illegal detentions down in Guantanamo. And they have won their challenges in the Supreme Court. They haven't won in terms of enforcing those court rulings. But the Center for Constitutional Rights has just published a book, The Articles of Impeachment. And so this is very much a part of all of the work that we're doing within what we can broadly and perhaps abstractly refer to as the peace movement in this country. Many organizations have this as a part of their, a central part of their work. It's not an explicit theme or sub-theme of this Sunday's rally and march, but as you can imagine, you know, when we try to articulate the core themes for this action, there's no end to the list. As Joe, the opening introductory remarks that Joe made at the beginning of the program this morning, there are so many elements that outrage us, that are criminal in terms of the policies of this administration, that go far beyond the war in Iraq. You would have an endless list of themes to address, but the impeachment, it seems to me, is growing in terms of its standing within the peace movement and within the broader progressive community in this country.
Yeah, and I think meanwhile you notice that the Republicans are running away from the Bush administration in droves. Not because of their politics about the war, but because of the way the war's been carried out, because of the incompetence and viciousness and inhumanity that they've displayed in the wake of the hurricanes, because of the entire giveaway of America that these people are engaged in. The fact of the matter is, as Americans who tend to see politics, unfortunately, as kind of like sort of less important than the Super Bowl, you know, but as people begin to look around and see their own healthcare situation, their own communities, their own society beginning to fall apart, as they begin to realize that this is a government that, should God forbid there be a real outbreak of the avian flu, these guys are incompetent, and everyone's suddenly aware of that. And Republicans do not want to lose elections because of the incompetence of these sleazeballs in the executive branch of the government. And I think that there is a tipping point, and we'd never, and you alluded to this, Will, we never know where that tipping point is. And keeping the pressure up, doing everything, and I mean everything that is legitimate and legal that can be done to draw attention to the incompetence and horror of all of this is crucial. The rally in March on this Sunday at the Waterfront Park is one major example of that process, of those activities. People should be keeping up the pressure at every level. There should be letters to the editor. There should be pickets. There should be spontaneous outbreaks of confrontation. There should be almost any activity. And I still say using chalk on the sidewalks, whatever it takes and everything that it takes, all of it together comes to the point where suddenly this administration is no longer legitimate. And that is happening. And it is happening more rapidly than I expected, and I think more rapidly than a lot of people thought.
Chuck has a very important question, and that is, can something like a peace movement gather momentum from anger? And I think absolutely it can. I think peace movement, by definition, is an opposition movement. And opposition movements, in general, are fueled by discontent and by anger to a large degree. Now, the difference is, yes, you can express that anger. You can gain strength from that anger and momentum from that anger. You just don't ever let it spill over into violent opposition, because that drains your cause of all its momentum. And impeachment, the idea that impeachment is something that can be legitimately carried out has gained momentum in recent months. And I think that is definitely adding steam to the opposition to this war. John Conyers, as we talked with Lewis Lapham a couple years ago, released a report at the end of last year, an exhaustive report of all this administration's transgressions, and builds, in my opinion, a watertight case that this man should be removed from office. Recently, on the floor of the Senate, Senator Russ Feingold brought a motion to censure the president because of his illegal wiretap program. So we're seeing official opposition to this administration gather momentum. And I think everybody realizes that impeaching the guy is predicated upon electoral victories this November. But how are we going to achieve that? A big part of the equation is events like the one coming up on Sunday.
I think we have a caller on the line. Gordon, hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So that guy that called that was breaking up Dave or Dan.
What James.
James. I think he's anti-Semitic.
Well, that's...
But who cares? Terror, you know what? How can you have terror on an emotion? What they're trying to do is remove an emotion.
You mean war on an emotion? Is that what you mean?
Wreak havoc, terror on an emotion. Terror is an emotion. And so I find it just kind of real funny that we're all going on emotion right now.
Well, wait. Now let's break that down a little bit. Terrorism, that is the use of attacks against relatively innocent civilian targets with the destruction of life and property as being a kind of a, not just collateral damage, but a deliberate strategy.
Right.
That's a real thing. That's not emotion.
Well, but it's used to trigger an emotion of fear, and it's there are key words that they use. Just like if you have a ticket or you have something that has to go to see a judge, the judge doesn't have time to read your paperwork. He does have time to look at points, and he grades your paper by points, and then he goes ahead and he comes into a case knowing how many points that you raise in your paperwork. So say you're guilty, but you come in and you raise enough points and say that you're an asset to society, not a liability, he'll go on that. But above and on that, so they're using the word terror as a trigger for their gun. But the tipping point, I think, is when China, you see Chinese trucks and you see Unocal and you see their gas trucks going by the gas stations, and there's hundreds of people in line, but it seems all the gas is going to the ports and not to the people. So... I think the tipping point is when something really happens to the public at their own homes, at their own homestead. And, and you guys are also talking about why no one's covering this in the media. Well, who do you think owns the media? You already know this, Joe and Abe. GE owns the media. Fox owns the media. They don't want you to know this because they're reaping profits on the war. So they don't want you to stop the war. They want to reap profits, so they're going to keep it quiet. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So we have to look at who's pulling the chains here, who's the puppet masters, and the puppet masters are schizophrenic. They're actually eating themselves alive.
Well, that's an interesting, their own self-destructiveness is an interesting point. Listen, I want to give some others opportunity.
Well, just a second, I thought I had 3 minutes.
Is there a three-minute rule?
Well, isn't that usually what 3 minutes?
Do we have a three-minute rule?
I want to make one last point.
Go ahead,
and
make your point.
You know, if you are complacent, you are guilty. You are part of the problem if you are complacent.
Uh-huh.
And here is the thing. We must use every resource to our availability to get the word out. And GE and Fox and these people do not own public access television. They do not own it, and there's no one using it. there's some little bit of people here and there using it, but we must get behind the people that are on public access, because Gordon Smith's trying to remove it and get rid of freedom of speech.
Mm.
So we must get behind freedom of speech through public access television. Now, you know Joanne Bowman, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is kind of a plug. Joanne Bowman will be on Brain Stew tonight at 8 p.m. on Channel 11. So if no one's ever seen her and put the words to her mouth, she is a beautiful woman. She is smart and intellectual, and she will be on Brain Stew tonight to talk about some of these issues of what we can do in our own community to start driving our life away from some of this government stuff. And mm-hmm. we're going to be talking about the kicker tax and stuff. So Joanne Bowman tonight, 8 o'clock on Channel 11. And we're making a difference, and that's what. And you guys are making a difference, and I commend you. But we got to take access seriously.
So, thank you very much.
Thanks, Gordon.
Bye.
Can I just mention one other reason to come out this Sunday, and that is to meet folks who are thinking about the same things that you're thinking about, have the same set of concerns, making some connections to start building organizations in your neighborhoods, in our community. There's plenty of organizations that are working on these issues, whether it's healthcare or U.S. foreign policy, that you can plug into locally, of course. But that shouldn't limit you. You might find yourself marching this Sunday beside some folks. You get a conversation going, and next thing you know, you might be starting the next mass organization in Portland that holds our commercial media, holds their feet to the fire, holds our elected representatives accountable for their policies. It's another reason to go out there and to be within this very broad and expanding community that's opposing the policies out of Washington, D.C.
And I want to talk about another aspect of going to demos and rallies. The fact of the matter is it's a social event. It confirms and strengthens your sense of community, as you suggest. But beyond that, it also gives you the opportunity to discover how not alone and how not crazy you really, really are. And I think that there's such a variety, as you suggest, of concerned communities that are going to be at an event like this. It's a marvelous opportunity. And and just in the informal social aspect, yeah, meet nice people.
And it feels good. It makes
cool.
you feel better, like you're not a lone voice in the wilderness.
Right, and I think that there are many reasons for rallies and marches, and one of the main ones is to remind us all that we are significant in numbers and that we do have a real commitment to these activities and to confirm for ourselves the validity of our positions. And this is terribly important, particularly in a culture where most people come home and turn on the television and blip out on stupid shows around getting some money or seeing some improbable sitcom. So, rally and march to end the war, begin the peace, March 19th, this Sunday at 1:30 at Waterfront Park by the Morrison Bridge. Good thing.
Should go to the phones. Who? Kathy, you're next. Good morning.
Good morning. what I was going to say, what you just said about community building, I'm going to just follow along with that. I'm a member of the First Unitarian Church, and a large number of us are going to be coming from that setting to the mm-hmm. rally. I have a 14-year-old. I also have a 20-year-old. I get nervous about both of them when I think about this war and how it's sort of eating our young. But I will make my 14-year-old come to the march with me.
You're going to make him come?
I'm going to make him come. I consider it part of his political education. I told him that if you laugh at Bush bumper stickers, then you have to do something about it.
Well, so, I'm trying to imagine, are you going to put a pencil in his nose or grab him by the ear?
You know, 14-year-old boys, you just threaten them with not eating and everything goes your way.
Okay.
But I will take him, and if he has any friends that want to go, I will take them, because I think just like seeing their parents vote and follow through with what we talk about is part of their political education. And they, too, need to see that they are part of a larger group, that is uncomfortable with what's happening in our culture. That's it.
Thank you, Kathy.
No, that's the call. No, I think, I don't know about dragging the kids.
Oh, yeah, march or eat, kids.
March
or eat. There you have it.
Bring the kids, and I...
March and then he can eat.
You know, I got something I got to tell you. Once you start marching, make it so that people in wheelchairs and older folks and kids, you know, people with little kids can keep up.
We have standing orders for the folks at the front who are going to be carrying a big peace banner.
Uh-huh.
Actually, it's going to be the veterans and the military families who are going to be leading
Great.
Off this march. And the guidelines, the only guideline that they must abide by is to go slow. We're in no hurry to get through this wonderful march.
The police always try to rush it along, you know.
Oh, yes. The squad cars will be speeding ahead, and we'll let them speed ahead because this is our march. This is not their march. And we're going to be going at a pace that's appropriate for everybody. This family-friendly event is going to be try to accommodate everybody's pace.
A crucial question for me. Radical cheerleaders, yes or no?
Oh, of course. It's not even a question. Joe.
Radical cheerleaders.
Of course the radical cheerleaders.
I was made a radical cheerleader a while back, several years ago.
We'll be
now, I'm more honored in the breach than because I never go to practice.
You do have nice pom-poms.
You like my pom-poms?
I do.
Well, thank you.
This is getting a little personal.
All right. Rally in March. Yes. All right. What do we have to do to... What do we have to do to get people to... How do we guarantee... We have an audience of... They tell me somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000 people. That's what they say for this show. And how do we get each of those people to call five people each and bring all of them to this event?
Well, we ask them. So call five of your friends and bring them all to the event.
Yeah, five. Five friends who then you tell, call five of your friends. You see, this could, if people actually do it, this could, whether or not it brings out the actual numbers, this is reaching out, using an event to reach out to vast numbers of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a tape recording. It's not, you know, it's not a scripted event. It's you reaching out to people you care about to remind them of their moral, political, and social obligation to put an end to this lying, ugly war, putting an end to this destruction of healthcare, destruction of jobs, destruction of the environment, putting an end to the destruction of human rights, putting an end to the torturing, the real, honest torturing that's going on, putting an end to this false war, to the horrors of this war, which may be spread by these people to Iran and to Syria and to God knows where else.
Venezuela,
yeah. One good thing about this war is they can't deal with Latin America and this war at the same time. It's the only good thing.
It has distracted them from the assault they had been launching against Venezuela. And speaking of Venezuela, one of our speakers,
yes,
Luis Primo, who is a labor rights advocate down in Venezuela, is going to be one of our speakers. And you can't beat the lineup that you're going to see when you come out to this rally on Sunday. And can I give a phone number for volunteers if people want to get even more involved?
Yes.
Because, if you'd like to actually, put your shoulder to the wheel for this event on Sunday.
There's wheels?
There are wheels, all sorts of places you can put your shoulder.
Okay.
You can call the Peace and Justice Works office at 503-236-3065. 503-236-3065, and we'll leave that number with the KBOO desk if you want to call later.
Yeah.
But there are wonderful ways of plugging in. You're going to learn about how one of these events is pulled off here in Portland. And we're hoping, of course, with your help, just as Joe and Abe pointed out, if you make those phone calls to your friends and neighbors, if you maybe walk a precinct, walk around your neighborhood, introduce yourself to your neighbors and say, do you know about this peace march on Sunday, this coming Sunday, and invite them to join you in marching for peace. If we can make this the record-breaking mobilization for peace in Portland, that's going to be a significant contribution to bringing this war to an end, to bringing the troops home.
Are people able to, is there a website people can visit and download and print flyers to hand out to their neighbors?
Oh, absolutely. You can go to the PPRC website.
With the what?
The Portland Peaceful Response Coalition's website, which is pprc-news.org. That's pprc-news.org. news, N-E-W-S, .org. And we have there, we have a big poster. We have a 8.5 by 11 flyer. And we have quarter page handbills you can download. If you want lists of the co-sponsors, just to make sure that your church social action group is on the list, or if you'd like to add your organization to the list, you can download press releases there. It's all there, all the tools you need to go out and leaflet a movie line, or to leaflet at the neighborhood library, or to leaflet at the grocery store. Plenty of ways to plug in immediately, or you can call the office, 503-236-3065, and volunteer to help.
You know, if people would take, like, just 10 leaflets off the Internet or or whatever, and just you know, put them out, just stick them here and there, or just hand them to people with a smile, it would be a very good thing. And I think that if there is, again, this tipping point concept is so important. There is a point at which there's a necessary saturation of consciousness. And this is something that we all have to strive for. And this rally in March is part of that process. And it's it works. It really does work. Again, going back to the analysis of the Vietnam War, we now know that the administration actually considered using nuclear weapons, and we now know that one of the reasons why they didn't do that was because the war grew more and more unpopular among the American people. And there were strategic reasons as well. I don't mean to suggest there weren't. But the fact of the matter is that you and I, all of us, have a real obligation here. And I want to mention something about the nuke issue. This administration has renounced the policy of the United States to never be a first user of nuclear weapons. These are scary people. They are crazy people. They think they have a messianic mission, you know, a mission from God to take over and direct the world. And that's, you know, that is fascist. That is a fundamental element of fascism. And they're into that at a huge level. And we must counter that in every way we can. Rally in March to end the war, begin the peace, March 19th, this Sunday, 1:30. March starts at 2:30 at the Waterfront Park at Morrison Bridge.
231-8187 is the number to call. This is KBOO 90.7 FM. This is Talk Radio. I'm Proctor. That's Joe Urich sitting next to me. And across from me is Will Seaman, mover and shaker of the upcoming Peace and Justice rally in March on Sunday.
Stop the music. I got to know, will there be drums?
Again, you know, radical cheerleaders, of course there'll be drums. Yes.
Drums! I love drums! Ugh! It's the only kind of militaristic aspect that I really like.
Oh, wait a minute. I got to take issue with that.
Oh, okay.
This is the No-War Drum Corps.
The No-War Drum Corps?
And the No-War Drum Corps is one of its missions. It's not a mission from God. It's not a mission from God.
Okay.
But its mission is in part to take back these rhythms, these wonderful drumming rhythms that have been appropriated by the war makers of the world. Throughout history,
these rhythms,
most basic, they're part of our DNA, these rhythms.
Yes.
And they energize us. And they've been used, exploited, cynically, by the war makers and the warmongers of the world. And the No-War Drum Corps is here to take those rhythms back and put them into the service of peace and justice. So,
all right.
These are not militarist cadences you'll be hearing. These are the cadences of peace and the cadences of revolution and justice.
That is a bizarre rationalization, but okay.
You don't believe me, Joe.
No, I'm not going to go there. All right, I got to tell people, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 o'clock, here an interview with the author of Smashed, Story of a Drunken Girlhood. And at 9:30, we'll speak with the chairperson of a new campaign focused on Middle East as part of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, who are also sponsors of your march. At 10 o'clock, hear an interview with a Salvadorian election observer in this weekend's election process there. At 10:30 on Stage and Studio, the topic is Stark Raving Theater's premiere production of The Mark. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, an exclusive interview with a man who was imprisoned for 3 years without charges by the United States at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan and then in Guantanamo in Cuba. And tune in tomorrow morning for Talk Radio at 7:30. The guest will be Kelly Campbell of American Friends Service Committee and an Iraqi woman who will be in town this weekend for the big peace mobilization. You mentioned her earlier, Will.
Yes.
And I want to also remind people this Thursday night, My Name is Rachel production, it's kind of a reading of this play, at 7 o'clock at the St. Francis Church. Is that right? St. Francis Church, did I say? Yeah, at the St. Francis Catholic Church, 330 Southeast 11th, this Thursday night at 7. Hey, all this great stuff. And it's all happening right here, more or less.
Thank goodness for KBOO.
Should we get some callers?
Yeah, let's get
Greg, good morning.
Good morning. I was just reading that there was 87 more bodies found in Baghdad that were executed. And, of course, the term
executed by whom
is not mentioned at all. I find it interesting that one of our famous people, Negroponte, who was in charge of the death squads in South America, is in charge in Iraq now.
Yeah, that is creepy, isn't it?
It is pretty creepy, and I find that that's the technique that probably is going to be used against the Sunni rather than the Shiites. So.
Well, now, are you suggesting that there's somehow a link between Negroponte's processes in El Salvador and the death squads that are appearing in Iraq?
I would say that they're very similar in nature, aren't they?
Well, their behavior is similar. Certainly.
Pardon? Pardon?
Yeah, I say their behavior is similar.
Yeah, I find it an interesting technique that is picked up by the Shiites. I find it very, hey, can we make our conclusions?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that the while there's some analogous aspects, and while certainly Negroponte's presence is creepy, and certainly the things he was doing before are horrible. But I think that what's going on in Iraq is more about the indigenous struggles and issues in that region, and that the U.S., what essentially the U.S. did was break apart a compact and orderly system, much like the death of Tito broke apart the system in Yugoslavia. And as a consequence of that destruction of order, not necessarily good order, it was fascist order, really, as a consequence of that, all kinds of ancient grievances and horrors and bad feelings break out. And when they break out in this manner and the U.S. becomes an oppressive force in the region, I think that's very destabilizing. And I think the United States government made a terrible misanalysis of the whole thing. I don't know if the U.S. is behind the violence that's going on there, though, except for the violence, of course, that we ourselves have done.
Well, I find it interesting that the same technique is followed through, wasn't around before there.
Well, killing people is a universal terror technique.
In order to have a death squad or do these executions of 87 people, you discover, you have to have some kind of armed militia that is organized that would be more recognizable than, let's say, someone who is doing the cells that might be doing a roadside bomb. You'd have to have some kind of organization in order to do that.
Yeah, but I think you should
give... The United States might know about this?
There has actually been some stuff written about the parallels between the tactics adopted in El Salvador. So, for example, the militia, the Mano Blanco, terrorist right-wing militia in El Salvador, and the military advisors. I mean, the same personnel. Negroponte isn't the only continuity with the Central America wars in Iraq.
Yeah.
There's a military guy named Steele, and again, I apologize, I can't think of the names here, but if you do a little checking, for example, on Common Dreams, there has been some very interesting and very frightening analyses done, drawing the continuity in terms of the tactics, the use of death squads, but also in terms of the personnel, and that's
John
the
Poindexter, Elliot Abrams.
I have one question before I go, and I'll just leave this question. Why is it that James can utter his nutcase stuff on this radio station, yet anyone that brings a conspiracy up is cut with short shrift and actually even accused of being a racist?
I don't think we accuse anyone of being racist.
I think
racist,
that we stop beating our wives.
It's racist that these guys aren't smart enough to figure this to figure this plan out to take four airplanes and smash them into buildings.
Well,
why is that anyway? Why is it the people that bring anything a conspiracy up with this? This lunatic can rant on and on and on every time he's on the air.
All right, well, in a nutshell, this is it. In my opinion, and I would hazard to say in Joe's opinion as well, the particulars as to how the 9/11 attacks were carried out, or even how they may or may not have been facilitated or organized by the United States government is less important than the fact that they did happen, and less important than the subsequent actions that they have been used to justify.
And there's more people who believe in that than what James utters every time he's on the air. So he gets more attention then, right?
Well, wait a minute. This is the kettle calling the pot black. I mean, you and he both are regulars on talk radio on cable. I mean, if you want to have a meta-analysis of talk radio, which I really don't want to do,
well,
there are regular callers, and you're one of them. And so is James.
Because I haven't called him for at least a month, okay?
Okay.
All right, and also the fact is that I pay, okay? If I want to listen to a nut like this guy, I could change to any channel on the AM dial, okay?
Yeah, but you won't hear him rebutted. Sounds like we lost Greg.
He got mad.
Oh, it's okay. He can get mad.
He got mad. We don't want anybody being angry. We're soft and gentle. And
no, we need to have debates warm. Like this.
We don't need no damn debate.
And I mean, for me, one of the challenges.
Bring on Howard Stern. What? Oh, sorry.
We haven't really talked about, and maybe we could touch on it briefly here.
Yeah.
Is what are the range of strategies and tactics that we should be exploring? In terms of building the movement here in the United States, I think there are a few people who are trying to puzzle through this. If I had a nickel for every time I was told that what I was doing was pointless and not productive, well, I might not be a millionaire, but I certainly have enough for pizza money for several years. But that is the challenge to anybody who touches these issues and is concerned about it. Yes, we have to march this Sunday. We want to be out there. We want to be with all of these communities that are coming together this Sunday to say, bring the troops home now, no more blood for oil. But we also know that marching alone is not going to do it. So how do we reach out to the broader community? How do we begin to build organizations to provide an institutional expression of a progressive politics in this country?
I think one of the functions of a rally and a march is to focus that energy. And that is very, very important. You know, if I say to people, and we say to people, please call five of your friends, and they will ask them to call five of their friends, what do we tell them? To oppose the war? A great abstraction. But we can say to them, come this Sunday. And ask your friends to come this Sunday, and ask your friends' friends to come this Sunday to the rally and march to end the war, to begin the peace, this Sunday. You can say 1:30 in the afternoon, 2:30 in the afternoon if you just want to march at the Waterfront Park at Morrison Bridge. It gives you a focal point. It gives you a sense of community and a sense of strength. And it's just one activity. I say on your own, make posters and hand them out. On your own, right on the sidewalks. On your own, spontaneously talk about stuff. But those issues, those approaches, have to be matched or put together with the sense of community that a rally and a march build.
All right, who do we have next, Eduardo? Beth, good morning.
Good morning. Going for sure. I work Saturday night, 16-hour graveyard shift, and get off at 8 in the morning, but I'm pretty used to these marches being on Sunday. So I just, stagger around until the march starts. It's hard sometimes to get through the speakers, but I love Ramon Ramirez.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's pretty good speaker. I'm calling because of something that was said earlier about this being a war on terrorism. The guy yelled it. And to me, war is terrorism. If terror is an emotion, when bombs are falling on you, those bombs are creating terror. So war is terror. And I heard something said last night that was... I thought it was really funny. Gloria Steinem said it on the Bill Maher show. She said, a president who invades the wrong country can't be expected to wiretap the right people. And I just love that. And I can't, at my workplace is very conservative. I've seen people going into work doing double takes on my bumper stickers. The only organization I can tap as far as getting anyone to come would be my goat herd. I'm not sure if it's legal to bring goats to Portland. I don't know.
Well, sure, as long as you have some...
a line and have them all with clapboard signs on.
Well, I don't see why not.
I have an old Volvo wagon that I call it my goat taxi, and I can shove five in the back.
Can you absolutely. Can you kind of rope them up
bring
a little
the goats.
Bit?
Oh yeah, of course.
No,
because
I think
for
that...
their own sanity, I would. Because, you know, they're goats and we're people and we probably scare them to death.
Well, I think actually I'd say more goats the merrier.
Yeah, there's some great biblical imagery waiting to be made there with the goats.
Well, I do always search for the radical cheerleaders because at all the marches I bring my host shows, I tend to just get absolutely high on the peace marches. They're wonderful, but I do like to have a beat. I think what was mentioned earlier about a rhythm,
mm-hmm.
you need a rhythm, you know, it's a movement, and the movement needs to have that music. The music's the inner beat, and you know, I'm an elderly person, but boy do I love those marches. And I bring my host shows and I try to get behind the radical cheerleaders because they do have a rhythm. They're wonderful. But I'm coming for sure. And
well, bring the goats.
Yeah, that might scare them to death, but
well,
I do have a
goats,
book on various ways you can utilize goats for carrying, you know, wagons or carrying children or whatever. And I mean, I know it can be done. I don't know if I have the time right now to figure it all out.
Well, don't worry about it. I mean, bring some friends.
I'm coming.
And if you can bring the goats, I think it'd be cool. The only thing I have to warn you about is that somebody's got to pick up after the goats.
Exactly.
You know.
Well, and Joe, you also didn't ask about another musical act that's going to be there.
Hey, thanks for the call, Beth.
And that's the Raging Grannies.
The Raging Grannies, not the Raging Grannies!
I'm afraid so. The Raging Grannies
will be
out there on Sunday, yes.
What do they do? What do they...
Well, they rage, for one thing.
They rage?
They sing, of course.
Oh, they're singing Raging Grannies.
And the Billionaires for Bush, I always like seeing that.
The Billionaires for Bush, well, I don't know.
We haven't heard back from them, but I think...
they usually show
up. Yeah, it's pretty likely.
But the Raging Grannies, that's a scary thing. Man, singing ladies.
Yeah, well, that's terrifying.
That doesn't seem to, when you say it, I mean it's... No, the Raging Grannies are wonderful.
And there's some other wonderful musical acts that are going to be providing... you know, some accompaniment to welcome us to the Pioneer Courthouse Square. And there's even an opportunity for everybody who's there from 1:45 to 2 p.m. just before the rally starts. There's going to be the possibility for everyone out at Waterfront Park to sing themselves. They will become
a sing-along?
The music. Yeah, absolutely.
A sing-along?
Yes.
Pete Seegerish?
Pete Seegerish, yes.
Oh, man.
Gospelish.
Gospelish?
Oh, cool.
Yes. If that's,
sounds like more and more fun all the time.
Yeah, no, I
you don't want to miss this.
Oh, I think it's cool. March 19th, that's this Sunday, 1:30, and then the march starting at 2:30, Waterfront Park. Rally and march to end the war, begin the peace. Listen, a focal point for all our energies, an opportunity to show up and bring your friends, bring your neighbors, bring your kids, bring your grannies, bring everybody.
Well, I want to play, before Will asks to say goodbye at the end of the show here, this question I've been wanting to ask you all day. How do you rebut those people who are saying this time around, like they did in Vietnam, that the reason things aren't going better is because the morale of the troops is undermined by people like us?
And the media.
And the media protesting the war and opposing the war.
Well, I mean, my first response is that any time we have heard from soldiers talking about these things, I've never heard a single soldier say that their morale had been hurt by the peace movement. First of all, just for the same reasons we talked about why most of the people in this country don't hear from the peace movement very often. It's not an element of our society that gets a lot of coverage, and so they don't hear about it too often. And if you talk to the soldiers, I mean, if you listen to reports from soldiers or soldiers returning, doing presentations in the community, They don't say that the problems with morale has to do with people dissenting from the war. In fact, if you look at a very recent public opinion poll, most of the soldiers in Iraq, serving in Iraq, want to put an end to the U.S. occupation.
Isn't that interesting? That's really true.
I think what has had a dramatic effect on morale, and I don't mean this facetiously, is the horrendous attacks that they have suffered and the losses they have suffered and the role they have been asked to play as occupiers in that country. There's nothing that is more demoralizing to an idealistic young man or woman who joined the armed forces to serve their country to discover, as they discovered in Vietnam and as they are discovering more and more in Iraq, that they are not wanted there.
Well, and I think it's really, the administration has these soundbite manipulations. Remember they had a bunch of soldiers, men and women, that they lined up and had them say lines that had been prepared ahead of time with fake interviewing with Bush. You remember that? And this cornball stuff that the press, unfortunately, allows them to get away with far too often. The fact of the matter is that we had Penny Allen on a while back, and the fact of the matter is that she talked with an on-the-ground soldier and has images that she's put out on the net and elsewhere and in art forums. The fact of the matter is that most of the young men and women who are serving in this war are discovering for themselves that the whole thing was a gigantic fraud, a big con game around the ambitions of these, and I'm not going to, enough is enough with these guys, these petty, give away America, make the rich richer, make everybody else poor, fascists.
I mean, I've heard plenty of people who support Bush tell us that we're treasonous in our behavior.
Oh, they always say that.
But I think if most soldiers that I've heard, especially those who have spent time in Iraq, are pretty sensible. I mean, there's nothing that brings you down to earth quicker than being in a conflict zone, and nothing that focuses your attention more clearly than this everyday, ever-present threat. And I think many of these soldiers are extremely grateful to hear that there are people in this country that care about them, genuinely care about them. These military families that are going to be marching on Sunday, these veterans organizations that are marching on Sunday, and everybody who's going to be out there on Sunday who cares about those soldiers, those service people, also care deeply about the Iraqi people who are suffering horribly from this war, but feel that the way to express that caring most is by calling for and working for bringing them home as soon as possible.
Well said.
Well said indeed. And I really, one of the great myths that the right wing has promulgated successfully about Vietnam is that there was this trashing of the soldiers returning home from Vietnam. And this made me ask all the people I know who are veterans, a lot of people, and actually reach out on the net with this question. Did anyone actually experience, being spit upon, being hollered at, or anything? Turns out it's not true. It is a mythology promulgated by the Rush Limbaughs of our world. The fact of the matter is that even in that conflict, which grew very bitter at home, even in that conflict, no one was faulting the soldiers for doing what they had been directed to do. And I want to make clear this point. These people who are serving in Vietnam are, for the most part...
In Iraq?
In Iraq, because they're so similar. In Iraq, these people are, for the most part, working-class people who have had opportunity structures cut out from under them by these very same politicians and have joined the military very often because they desperately needed the opportunities that the military presented themselves as giving them. And this is, this is one of the great con games of our age. And I think that we need to deal with that eventually as well. I actually sometimes think it would be great if we had a national draft. I think this war would end almost immediately. No, says Will Siemens.
Oh, no, I think you're absolutely right about that.
You agree
with that? I think if there were a draft, this war would be over in a week.
Really? And I think especially if we insisted that that members of Congress's children...
Yeah, we would have to stipulate exceptions?
Well, the exception in Vietnam, which created a class structure around it, was the exception of college students for a long, long time until they initiated the lottery.
Deferments, that's it.
Yeah, deferments. We have to insist, in fact, that the Bush girls, the Bush babes, they should be on the front lines there. Hey, that's fair.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I'd say so. Cheney's daughter?
Good in their Marine Corps haircuts.
Cheney's daughter?
Yeah.
We can let Cheney go out there as long as we can aim him so he doesn't shoot his own people. Cheney at the front of the line?
Well, certainly we need to increase the age. I don't think anybody under the age of 25 should be allowed to serve in the military.
Yeah, let's make
I think
it
that
oldies.
Would also put an end
oldies.
To war pretty quick.
Yeah, oldies. Naked old men. I like that. All right. Rally in March to end the war. Begin the peace. March 19th. That's this Sunday, 1:30 p.m. 2:30, you start marching. Waterfront Park. This is important. If you don't do anything this weekend, do that.
If you want to volunteer, you can call the Peace and Justice Works office at 503-236-3065. There are flyers and posters to distribute. You can download them at pprc.news PPRC.org.
PPRC-news.
PPRC-news.org.
All right. Keep on keeping on. I'll see you this Sunday.